Hello, and welcome back to What Page Are You On? A podcast between me, Bethany Rutter, and...
And me, Alice Slater.
In which we chat books. In this episode, we talk about rape, murder, and childhood sexual abuse. So if any of those do not sound like things you want to be listening to, I would not listen to this episode, because we do talk about them with some regularity. In this episode, we're going to talk about crimes. I think it's interesting. The darkness of the human spirit. Alice?
Well, we're truly, I think, in an era of true crime. We have things like Making a Murderer on Netflix. We have podcasts such as Criminal,
which I was listening to only today.
Law, Sword and Scale. I mean, there are so many.
The Daniel Morgan murder. It was one I particularly liked. I thought that was a really good true crime one.
So, and then also books. There have been a few titles this year that have been massive, and we've read quite a few of them, so we thought we would have a chat about them. Bethany, what was your favorite true crime novel of the year of our Lord 2017/16?
I bet if you ask like anyone on Twitter, what is Bethany's favorite book of 2017, they'd be like, Fact of a Body, and I'd be like, yep, correct.
I only read it because you had tweeted about it so much. I was like, all right, I bought the hardback, which I don't do very often.
No, I hate hardbacks, but I love this book.
Yeah.
And now I have two copies, so that's cool.
Oh, good.
I loved Fact of a Body. It is very dark and sad.
Give us, like, how would you nutshell it?
In a nutshell, it is 50% some True Detective shit. Like, it really, one half of it really reminded me of True Detective. But the other half is the memoir of the author, who is Alexandria Marzano-Lesnovich, that is her name, going through her life up to the point where she becomes involved in the death row appeal for the dude who is the other half of the story. So it's half her telling his story and half telling her own story, which both stories involve child sexual assault and abuse.
And there are kind of these parallels with multiple points of each narrative.
Yeah.
And I guess the crux of the book was that, which I thought this was so interesting, is that she went into her line of work because she was so opposed to the death penalty. And then she found herself on this case where she suddenly found her values questioned.
Yeah.
Which I thought was so interesting. And that's what led me to read it. Well, to continue reading it. No, it was your recommendation, but that's what it...
That was the thing that you took from it.
Yeah.
Whereas what I took from it was the really interesting question, which is, where does evil begin? Like, how far back can you trace the origin of someone that is going to do something bad? And can you stop it? Like, who can stop it? How far back can you go? I don't know. I just thought it was such an interesting book. I think they are two interesting stories that probably stand up on their own. Her story less so, because it's like her at college and her living her life and whatever. But she is such a good writer that both sections just read so amazingly. I just think she writes so well, and I really liked reading it.
Yeah, I think on a line level, and her the way that she kind of draws this narrative and interweaves the two stories is amazing. One criticism that I came across on Twitter.com was someone, I can't remember who it was, I'm not intentionally avoiding naming names, well I would anyway I suppose, but whoever it was said that they didn't really feel there was actually any parallel between the two stories, and they were surprised that any publisher kind of went for this. But it really struck me that I could totally see the parallel. Like, that's not how the human mind works. And this wasn't her, as she was researching this case, kind of connecting these dots. This was a kind of retrospective, laying down all the cards and finding that it wasn't just all in her head.
Yeah.
You know, there were actually lots of parallels that would have made her remember some of her experiences as well, because she would have repressed a lot of it.
So my criticism of this book is more an ethical one, which is at a point quite close to the end, she says, my sister does not consider herself to be a victim, and I've changed her name in this book. And I was just like, you have such a distinctive surname. There is no way that anyone could not know who your sister is if they know you.
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, I wouldn't have talked about my sister being sexually assaulted by my grandfather if she didn't believe that that had happened. Whereas I think she's so within her rights to talk about her own experiences and also talk about this case that was a matter of public record that she was personally involved in. That was the only thing that I was like, I don't really like that.
Yeah, I was actually quite shocked by that because I thought unless you come from a family of like a dozen siblings.
She only has two.
She's got two. And isn't one a brother?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right? Yeah.
She has one sister. So I don't know. Yeah, I also, that made me cock an eyebrow because I thought, or arch an eyebrow, I should say. Because I did kind of think, I'm not sure how that could possibly work.
Yeah, that how that can be a good decision. But as a book, I just think it's such a wild ride that I have never really gone on before. Like, it's a story that is not hers and a story that is hers that I think work together equally well. And I think they're both interesting stories that are both told well. And I think that's really rare.
And I mean, and she has to fill in a lot of gaps, obviously. Like, it must have been a tremendous project to create a kind of narrative based on the 911 call, police interviews. I mean, she had access to a lot of information, but the crime had happened 20 years
yeah, a long time previously.
And she does, you know, she does kind of fictionalize lots of scenes to so that it makes sense. And again, I think that's something that the book was criticized for, but it's showbiz, baby. Like, isn't all true crime takes on some kind of,
yeah, no one was there for all of it. Yeah. So all true crime has to be at some point speculative.
And I wonder if it has, the criticism that it garnered, I wonder if how much of that is because it's a woman writing. And, you know, a woman writing true crime with that element of memoir.
Yeah, the personal. Mm-hmm. People don't like that. I am interested in any and all ethical criticisms of this book. I am interested in them. Mm-hmm. And I, just because I really love this book, I'm not like, no, it is impossible that any element of it is wrong. But yeah, I think should this book exist, yes. You know, especially given that she was there for some of the like legal element of it, and it was a case she knew really intimately.
And also because I think the crux of the book is the death penalty.
Yeah.
And what really makes her take stock is, first of all, she acknowledges that her kind of gut reaction is that she wants this man to die. Obviously, because of her own experiences, her own experience of abuse. And then what really makes her take stock and rethink is that the victim's mother stands up and says, no, like, yeah, I don't believe in the death penalty. And that's not what this man should, this isn't the punishment that he should be given. So her story is completely intrinsic to that personal kind of journey regarding.
And I think she does a really good job of all of the characters in the story that is not hers, who are real people, but I feel like she could have made the boy's mother look like a kind of irresponsible hick woman who managed to let her kid be raped and murdered by someone. And she doesn't. Like, that character is so complex. Like, I don't know. I really feel like she really fleshes out all of the people. Like, even the dude that does the crime, I feel like there's something, I don't know, I really believed in all of the people, that they weren't just fulfilling a role in telling her story, or she was just doing the bare minimum to tell that story.
Yeah, it did not feel indulgent.
Yeah.
And I feel like actually maybe that is what some of the kind of criticism has revolved around, this idea that it's quite an indulgent way to tell this awful story. Which I just disagree with. I don't think it felt indulgent.
It's more human.
Yeah.
It's never, I really didn't feel that there was like gratuitous descriptions of violence, sexual or otherwise. She can't help that she's just a really good writer. Yeah, I really love this book. And yeah, while I'm interested in ethical criticisms of it, I don't think you can convince me that it is not a great book, that and it should not exist.
And it reminded me of The Red Parts by Maggie Nelson, which I also read this year.
I also read this year.
And what did you think of the red parts?
Unfortunately, I think if I had read it before Fact of a Body, I'd have been more impressed by it. But because I read it after, I was just like, I want more. I want more. Like, I want... I felt quite... I don't know. It felt like it had... I really liked it. And I think it must have been, like, a hard book to write. Well, also bearing in mind the fact that she didn't know this woman, that this is an aunt that she didn't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, so The Red Parts is a memoir about Maggie Nelson's aunt who was murdered before Maggie was born, or when she was very young. No, before she was born, when her mother was a teenager.
Yeah.
And she, Maggie Nelson wrote a poetry collection called Jane when she found out about this horrific thing that happened in her family that her mother had always kept very quiet about and kept it very private. The Red Parts is then about the writing process of Jane and kind of telling the story of her aunt's murder and how it affected her family. Like,
the trial of the man.
Oh yeah, that's what like yeah, that's what brings it all.
Yeah, that's the kind of contemporary modern day thing, is that she's at this trial with her mum, neither of whom really want to be there. They're living in this tiny house that belongs to a cousin so that they can be close to the courthouse, and just going through the trial and how traumatic it is for her family, and like her granddad who's still alive, and this was his daughter, and blah, blah, blah. I really liked it. I think it's a really good, interesting book. I just was not as... I don't know why I just kept coming away from it being like, I want more of something, but I don't know what that thing is.
See, I read The Red Parts first, and to me that it's the best true crime book I have ever read, and I have read a lot. I think because Maggie Nelson is just such an incredible writer, and I think it was the first time, and again, I guess maybe this is also what you saw in The Fact of a Body, it was the first time that I had read true crime that had so much kind of soul to it.
Yeah. Humanity.
Yeah, because almost everything else that I've read has been from the perspective of either a true crime journalist or someone who's in the business, someone who works
detective, pathologist, yeah, judge, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. So to have a story that was so close to the author's heart gave it such a kind of different dimension. And I think it's a dimension that's important, and it's really easy for true crime fans to forget, which sounds ridiculous,
people.
But
yeah,
it's very easy to forget that you're reading about real people, that this isn't just an extension of the crime section in a bookshop. That...
So what I thought was really interesting was someone that a friend of mine, Aiden, shout out to Aiden, meme dad, he didn't realise that Fact of a Body was... nonfiction until he was part of the way through it, and he was like, why does Bethany like this horrible book so much? Like,
wild.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe it is just such a wild story that you'd be like, oh, Bethany reads lots of thrillers. I don't know. I think maybe because it begins with the other story, and it's only when you see it from the other perspective, which is the author's experience, that you're like, oh, this is real. Like, this is the name of the author is the name of this character.
Isn't the tagline on the book like a memoir of a murder? I mean, I don't know. It's not my place to judge Aiden.
But yeah, or maybe who's reading it on Kindle and you don't look at the title. But I thought that was really interesting that you could do that. Like, whether or not everyone will do that is another thing. But yeah.
What I want to know is, did he enjoy the book more? Did he find it more engaging or less, finding out that it was a true story?
I know he found some things in it extremely upsetting, which probably only made him feel worse knowing they were true.
Yeah.
He mentioned a bit that I also found really distressing, which is about the car accident, which, is not really fundamental to the story and yet is exactly what you could say was the origin of a lot of the bad things that happen in the book. Which is what I mean about how it's a book about, like, where does evil begin and how far back can you trace it? But yeah, these books are really different to traditional true crime. And it feels like we are living in the golden age of people writing interestingly about terrible things that have happened.
I think particularly, though, that the thing with The Red Parts is because obviously it focuses so much on Jane, the victim. Well, one of the victims of this murderer. And that's something that Making a Murderer was really criticized for completely glossing over this woman who lost her life. And that's something that I think a lot of true crime is quite guilty of, is focusing on the crime.
Yeah.
And kind of
stripping back the humanity of the people involved.
Yeah.
Or only humanizing one element of it, one person. But related to, I know this is like a books podcast, but we're going to chat about other shit sometimes. Okay?
Yeah, man. We're just going to let it happen.
Have you ever listened to the episode of maybe Radiolab, which involves the other victim, the reason that Stephen Avery was originally in prison?
I have not.
So at the beginning of Making a Murderer, you're like, Stephen Avery was already in prison for raping a woman.
Yeah.
And it turned out he didn't do it.
Yeah.
And that might be why the police department wanted to pin this other murder on him, because they were going to have to make a massive payout for wrongly imprisoning him.
Because he was there for a long time,
right? He was in prison for like 20 years, yeah, something like that. But that woman, who was the woman who really was raped by someone, it's not like that didn't happen. In Making a Murderer, she's basically treated as like, at best, an inconvenience, and at worst, someone who maliciously brought down this innocent man and put him in prison for 20 years. And then I heard this Radiolab episode that was from a few years before Making a Murderer was on. And it's basically about how this completely ruined her life, how she was raped. She went through the trial of the man that she was 100% sure did it. He went to prison. She was still the victim of an extremely violent assault and lived her life. And then she found out that because she had been so sure it was him, he was not the right person at all. And DNA evidence proved that it was not him. And I just thought, this is such an important element of this story that,
yeah,
this titillating TV program that millions of people have watched don't know. So, yeah, I feel like there is just this lack of like humanity and context in a lot of true crime stuff.
But I think particularly with Making a Murderer, I mean, it was a TV show. There was time.
There were so many episodes of that.
It was Netflix. They could make it as long as they wanted. There was time to go into that.
Yeah.
It was a conscious choice by the filmmakers to not go into it.
Agree. It didn't suit their story.
And then when I think about other true crime books that I've read over the last like few years, another one that is a bestseller, every single bookshop in the country will have it on their shelves, and it's called Talking with Serial Killers by Christopher Berry D. And that is an example of the total opposite of what we're talking about. So this guy, his whole thing was that he's really good at striking up relationships with serial killers who are incarcerated, and he's managed to get exclusive interviews. He's managed to visit people that have otherwise refused to open up, to write this book about, I think he covers like 15 or 20 crimes. And the actual book is just awful. I don't think there is a single moment in which he mentions a sex worker by anything other than a derogatory name. And obviously a lot of these women were victims of these awful crimes. And he talks about them with such disregard. I found
dehumanizes, depersonalized. Yeah. They are interchangeable and they probably deserved it anyway.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so vile.
It's repulsive. And considering the insight that he has, the potential, it's just garbage. And it's a bestseller.
It's wild.
And it should be.
So a book that I read really in the last few weeks and loved, that I feel like is not getting the attention it deserves. I don't know when it was released, but I'd never heard of it before. My dad was like, I've downloaded this book onto the Kindle. It's called The Adversary by Emmanuel Carrère. Have you heard of this?
It was nonfiction book of the month for Waterstones in September.
I think I maybe saw it on a Waterstones table, and that was the only other place I saw it. I have not heard anyone else talk about it. When I tweeted about it multiple times, no one was like, I'm also reading this, or I have read this. Have you read it? I assume not.
No, I have a copy. I haven't picked it up yet, though.
It is a wild ride. It is just one of the like wildest stories I've ever heard. I can't believe it's true, but it is true.
Because they were saying this was the true, I was going to say the true blood, in cold blood of 2017. Like, it is as iconic and as incredible.
Yeah, it's written amazingly. Like, the dude who wrote it, I don't know if this is down to the translation or down to the original writing, but it's written so well.
Nutshell it.
It's about a man who murdered his whole family, including his parents. So his parents, his two children, and his wife, and potentially planned for himself to also die, did not die. As he was lying in the hospital in a coma, waiting to wake up, I guess, or die, the people around him who survived were trying to contact other people in his life, and basically his whole life was a lie. He didn't have the job he said he did. He did not, he had never had the job he said he did. He had been lying about where he was going for about 20 years, every single day. He didn't have any money. He was pretending that he was investing money for his family, and he was that was how he was funding his life. It's just the biggest deception story I've ever read that ends in the most catastrophic way. It's wild. It's so unbelievable, but it's true. It's literally the kind of thing that there's like a quote on the website. I can't remember who publishes it. I think it's maybe Penguin. And on their website, there's a quote from someone that's just like, it is the truest thing that you would never believe is true. And I'm like, yes, that is literally
Holy
it.
Shit.
But it's so well written. And it's written by this journalist who was like reporting from the trial, who managed to like over the years cultivate a kind of arm's length relationship with the guy who did it.
Oh, of course, because he survived.
Yeah, he's alive.
He does
alive.
Actually survive. So he is alive today as we speak.
To tell the tale.
Holy
and I feel
shit.
Like it really responsibly contextualizes. It doesn't really humanize him. It doesn't. Obviously, it humanizes him, but it never goes, and I totally understood why he did it. And I totally sympathize. It's very like, this man is like capable of the worst things that you could do. And this is kind of how it happened. Like, this is the weird domino effect from one point in his life that led him then to kill his whole family.
Good God. Okay,
it's
I need
so
to read
interesting.
It.
And that's not, I haven't really spoiled it because you know all of this pretty instantly.
That's the premise of the book, isn't it? Like, that was the selling point, was like, because his job, he was claiming to be a doctor as well, right?
At the
like
World Health Organization.
It's so wild.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, but then he got away with it for 20 years, like, and he would have just kept going, presumably.
Yeah, until he ran out of money, which he did.
Ah.
but yeah, that is a book that I really loved. And obviously I feel bad being like, I love this book. This book is so great. I really enjoyed reading it about all these horrible things.
But I think,
you know,
that
if
is
you're
going to
make art, you might as well make good art.
But I think that is something that's worth talking about when we talk about true crime, is that obviously it is, I find it really difficult to express kind of passion for it because it sounds so crass.
Yeah.
And books like, I think books like The Red Parts and books like The Fact of a Body, and even memoirs like Keith Simpson's memoir, which is amazing. I need to Google what it's called because I can't remember. It will come to me. But these books that are memoir, like, it is their story to tell. But when you have a true crime journalist, someone who's digging around, there is the kind of ethical question about profiting from
other people's pain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, and then I think that we have to be so careful about the way that we infuse about these books. Like, I cringe so hard. Oh God, I just want to like turn it on myself when people say things like, oh my God, that's my favorite serial killer.
Ugh.
Ugh, what's wrong with you? And like, I saw a picture on the internet, which is a terrible place. I don't recommend it. This picture of this woman who had Ted Bundy's bite mark tattooed on herself.
What a fucking weirdo.
Like, what the fuck is wrong with you, dude?
Yeah, like, part of me almost wants to go back and re-record my comments on The Red Parts because I was like, I wanted more of something. And it's like, who the fuck am I to say how Maggie Nelson should talk about this thing that happened to her family? Like, I don't know. I feel bad about even saying that now. I'm like,
it's just,
oh, I'm garbage.
Yeah, it's just, it is so hard to talk about, where, especially when you're so conscious that you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the fucking Ted Bundy tattoo guy, but
yeah,
you also, you know, it's hard to talk about something that interests you and is intriguing without infusing,
well,
you know?
I don't know. I just feel like children would not stop being sexually assaulted and murdered if people didn't write books. Like, I don't think that's the origin point that we need to return to. Like, do I wish that these crimes had never happened? Yes, given that they did happen, would I rather read an interesting account of them written responsibly? Also, yes.
And I think also that, I mean, obviously there is a difference between books like the Christopher Berry D book, Talking with Serial Killers, which is pure titillation, and something like Forensics by Val McDermid, which is actually super helpful if you're a crime writer, for example, or something like The Red Parts or The Fact of a Body, which are both memoirs. Like, there are nuances between these different types of books. And I'm sure there's also a lot of true crime, like Keith Simpson's book, 40 Years of Murder, which he was a pathologist, and he was an amazing pathologist. He is the guy that he discovered evidence at the crime scene of the acid bath killer.
Yep.
He was, like, just scrapping around in the garden. There's all this weird sludge everywhere. This guy is saying, I've killed all these people. You will never find any evidence. The guy's being arrested and gloating. And Keith Simpson finds kidney stones on the floor.
And he's like, I think the fuck not, bitch.
Yeah, there and, like, is this evidence guy, that is it. The whole trial rested on that. So that, for anyone studying criminology, anyone who is interested in pathology, like, that's a really, really valuable memoir. It's a really valuable resource.
I want to read the Val McDermid one because she wrote the thriller that made me love thrillers.
Which was?
A Place of Execution.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? Forensics is the only Val McDermid book that I read.
Place of Execution is the only Val McDermid book I've read.
Oh shit, look at that.
Yeah, maybe we should do a swap. Yeah, I love that book, and I think she's a real force for good in the world. I really like her as a concept.
As a concept.
Yeah, you know, just I'm glad she's there.
Yeah.
Although,
you know what I did not like about Forensics?
No, I don't, because I haven't read it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. every few pages, there is just a little black and white photograph, like a little illustration of a fly.
Why?
Because there's like a whole chapter on how you can determine the time of death based on what the insects are doing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But there was something about it I just found so distasteful. I really didn't like it.
That seems
very excessive,
doesn't it? The whole
book is like littered with these flies.
I'll read it.
I mean, read it. Don't be put off by the flies.
Okay.
The flies are incidental.
But no, I'd be interested to read a book by her about this.
I think because obviously she's an amazing writer, and it's because she's an amazing researcher. And each chapter covers a different area of pathology. And it's really intriguing. There's loads of stuff that I had no idea. I didn't know. And I think, you know, because we're like the CSI generation, like we just assume science can solve everything. It's really interesting to work out, not to work out, it's really interesting to learn how certain things are determined and worked out, because
there are rules. Like,
yeah,
there is logic, there is science. Some things cannot be done.
Yeah, and some things actually, like DNA evidence isn't infallible. And also there's a lot of stuff that a lot of external things which can indicate time of death or what's the phrase for, like, where
sorry, what's the phrase for what? Bless me.
Some bullshit. No, that's better.
That was sorry,
dramatic.
Listeners.
Bless you.
Thank
I should
you.
Be saying bless you to you. Oh, we're just going to keep that in then.
Yeah, it's fine.
The keep people awake. The show must go on.
If someone was having a little micro sleep, they're certainly not anymore.
Like, shut up. This is important.
Yeah.
We're talking about Val. No, I don't know. And so each chapter is about a different element of pathology, or forensic pathology. And each chapter also therefore pulls upon real examples in which these methods have been used. So it is, it's interesting. It's a wild ride. Because it's filtered through a kind of scientific lens, it isn't particularly empathetic. But at the same time, it's Val McDermid, so it's not just titillating fodder either. Yeah. I thought it was an amazing book.
But another thing that we were maybe planning on talking about, fiction that is based on real crime.
Oh, yes. The 2016-2017 trend.
Crime wave, if you will.
Oh.
And I was just thinking about that and about why would Alexandria Marzano-Lesnovich have less right to write about things that have happened to her than someone has to take real shit that happened to other people and turn it into a novel? And I feel like these novels aren't being criticized for that in the same way that people really writing about their own lives and their own experiences are. What the fuck?
So we're thinking specifically of like Emma Klein, The Girls, which is based on the Manson family. Sarah Schmidt, See What I Have Done, which is based on Lizzie Borden. And the Emma Flint
Little Deaths,
which is based on a less famous, a less kind of known
New York case from
1960s.
Yeah, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
I have read The Girls and I have read Little Deaths. I started reading See What I Have Done while waiting to meet you at Waterstones Gower Street one day.
So it goes.
Yeah, R.I.P. And I remember loving the first however much I managed to read, and then I didn't buy it that day, and I have it on my Kindle now, but I can't remember how much I read, and I don't want to read it all again because
I'm a lazy
bitch. You
just gotta like leave it until you can't remember anything and then start from the beginning. Because
yeah.
I think it's such a because the narrative chops between different characters, I don't think it's a book that I would struggle to get much from it if I had only read the first like chapter or two and then got back in. But that's an example of a book. I mean, I thought it was great. I loved it. I loved the different voices in it, particularly the Irish maid. Her like story just broke me clean in half, and it's not even the focus of the book, but it was just so real and so sad. It is interesting. Why did these also interesting that all these three writers are all women as well?
Women write crime and thrillers better than men. I've said it so many times. Maybe we even said it on the. No, we probably didn't.
I'll say it every day. I'll say it tomorrow.
Yeah, we're just better. Yeah, and the only one that we've talked about that was in any detail that was written by a man is The Adversary.
Oh, and in the last episode we did talk about Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, yeah.
Which is in many ways the perfect book.
Yeah, and in no way bullshit. It's perfect.
That's the hill that I am willing to die on.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's interesting that these three novels were written by women, as you just said.
I don't really think, I'm not necessarily drawing any kind of conclusions about that either.
No.
I guess all I'm really saying is I like to read women. I read more women than I do men. But I don't know, it is an interesting trend, especially because I don't think that, so Little Deaths was not sold off the fact that it was a true story.
Yeah, like, it wasn't, was it?
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah. And I don't think it makes it any more interesting to know that it is.
No. Because it's not a famous story,
yeah.
I didn't go into it with any preconceptions. I wasn't like, ooh, best do my research before I read this bad boy. Like,
or I think I know shit about this.
Yeah. Whereas obviously the Lizzie Borden case, I presume most people know the outcome of that. Ditto with the girls, with the Manson family. But I guess with
we've
the girls,
all listened to You Must Remember This.
You know, I still haven't.
It's so
I started
good.
To and I just didn't.
You
I
didn't
know.
Click.
No, I think so. I usually listen to podcasts when I'm washing up, and I pretty much exclusively listen to true crime podcasts. So I wash up in my like creepy little flat, and then I just get scared.
Wasn't scary enough for you?
No, I think it was the opposite. I think I was in a vulnerable place. I'd maybe been listening to a bit too much law.
You didn't want to hear about home invasion?
No thank you.
I think that's
my home
reasonable.
Is being invaded constantly by mice as well, so there's lots of like noises.
But yeah, those were like three recent fiction books what were based on real crimes, and they were fictionalized to varying extents, and it felt like See What I Have Done is the only one that's like explicitly and directly about the case that it's based on.
Yeah.
Whereas the other two reframe certain things, mm-hmm. especially The Girls.
Yeah, I mean, The Girls, I think younger readers that I have spoken to about that book as a bookseller who are less familiar with the Manson case, because, I mean, you know, I feel like we grew up knowing all about it, even though it was decades before we were born. Decades.
Multiple.
Yeah, but I've spoken to plenty of older teens have come in to pick it up, and I've, you know, discussing it with them, didn't know who the Manson family were, don't know who Sharon Tate was,
don't know that Kasabian, the band, is named after one of the Manson family.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. God, I'm such a precious baby. I didn't know that.
Linda Kasabian was one of the bad lads, and now the band Kasabian are just bad lads.
Oh, and this has just reminded me of, there's a book that has just come out in the UK, but I remember when the girls came out in hardback, I saw something about it, and I remember tweeting, like, ooh, what is it with Charles Manson at the moment? And the other book is called My Favourite Manson Girl.
Oh, okay.
It's a YA book, and I know, dude, after just saying that, like... And it's a really interesting book. I'm just trying to pull up who the author is, because I forgot about it. Okay, so My Favourite Manson Girl by Alison Umminger. So it's a YA book about a teenager who runs away from home to LA, where her actress older sister is living. And she gets this job to repay her parents for the airfare that she stole, researching the Manson family for her sister's ex-boyfriend film director, who wants to make a movie somehow related to the Manson family. He's not really sure. He just wants to, for some wild reason, pay this 15-year-old $10 an hour to read Helter Skelter, which is
legit.
Yeah, which is like the the Charles Manson.
Very different.
Very different. That's the goth in me. I feel like, because most of what I learned about Charles Manson, I learned through reading the Marilyn Manson biography by Neil Strauss of The Game. Awful man.
Weird. I didn't know that. That's weird.
What?
Wait, The Game?
Yeah, The Game.
So the dude who wrote
Pickup
The
artist,
Game.
The Game. Wrote Neil Strauss. Marilyn Manson's autobiography. He wrote it. And he also ghostwrote The Dirt, The Motley Crue.
This is wild.
Yeah, he's like a rock biographer. Was his like a day job,
but also piece of shit.
Yeah, but you know what? You can see. I mean, we're going way off track now, but you can see in those books what a piece of shit he is, because he talks about some of their antics. I'm sure they're all true. I'm not doubting that. But at no point did this man go, "Ooh, do you think we should include this story?" Like, there's some really disturbing stuff that happened to those fans, and it's just all in there. Mm-hmm.
My Favourite Manson Girl.
Yeah, so she's reading Helter Skelter, which is the book about the Manson family, for this, like, bogus research. And the book has nothing to do with the Manson family at all. It's about this runaway living in LA. And reading it, every now and again, she will suddenly just start talking about different Manson girls. And I felt really kind of inserted and weird. And I was like, I feel like you weren't writing a book about the Manson family, and then you decided that would be a good way to, like, bring it all together.
It was, like, a good vehicle.
And she was. It's in the back. She was like, I never intended to write a book about the Manson family. I'm like, yeah, you can tell, dude.
Well, I wonder why she did it.
It's a really strange book. And, I mean, I don't think nothing is too taboo for YA. Like, I'm down for whatever. But it was a very odd book to have in the YA section. Like,
did you read it?
Oh, yeah, I read the whole thing.
Mm.
Yeah, cover to cover.
What a strange book.
Weird little book. But it is interesting. I wonder if they delayed the release of it because of the girls. Because I saw it a year ago, but it only just came into stores.
So it's out around now?
It's out in the UK, yeah.
Cool. Well, I probably won't read it because
I've read
the girls.
That was like the most scathing I think I've ever been about a book in the public domain, but it's because I'm no longer a bookseller, so... Well, soon not to be a bookseller, so I feel I can be more honest.
Yeah. And that'll be good for us, you know, going forward.
You know, this should be a safe space where I can talk honestly about books.
Yeah, and, like, I don't want to slag shit off, like, for no reason, but I don't always feel like we have to say everything is great when it's not.
I mean, my general rule is I'd rather not talk about something
exactly.
If I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah,
but if it's relevant to the discussion.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, I'll bring it up, take a pop.
That was so beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Is there any other books we want to talk about
Where
today?
Where are we? No, I don't think so. Oh, that was about an hour.
Yeah.
That went by so quickly.
Time flies when you're having fun, talking about crimes.
I like the way that you say crimes with an S on the end. Yeah. You always plural it.
Yeah. It's not about one crime, is it?
Yeah, but crime is like a...
No, crimes is a genre.
Hi, sorry, where's your crime section, please?
Please guide me to your books about crimes. That will be me talking to another Waterstones employee who is not you, because you will not work there anymore soon.
So it goes.
R.I.P. Well, thank you for joining us for our second episode in which we talked about crimes. Tweet us with your thoughts. You know where we live. I live at Bethany Rutter. Alice lives at...
at Smokin' Tofu. And no we... G.
No, Smokin'.
Smokin' Tofu is an absolutely terrible app for saying verbally, but I'm stuck with it now.
And we are at What Page Pod.
I forgot that I was intending to ask at the end of every episode, what are you reading right now? But because we're doing two at once, I didn't ask it at the end of the last episode, and now I'm not in the habit, so I forgot.
But we can do it now.
What are you reading, pal?
So I just reread Shrill so that I could talk about it on episode one. And I just also was simultaneously reading a book that is so contentious, I do not want to go on record as having read it or had an opinion on it. And
we will one day discuss it, I'm
once
sure.
Once the dust has settled and we feel more comfortable in our opinions and whatever. And before I had to read either of those, one for the podcast, one for the Zeitgeist, I was reading Reservoir 13 by John McGregor, which I was enjoying so much, and I'm really looking forward to getting back into it. How about you, Alice?
I'm reading Peter Pan by J.M. Barrie.
Who?
Never Peter heard of Pan.
It. Never heard of
and
it.
And every time I tell someone I'm reading Peter Pan, they go, why?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't fucking know. I just
life
I
is dark.
It up, I started reading it. I always really liked Peter Pan. I always really loved that world. But it's actually a pretty racist world, pretty weird world.
That maybe should have been edited for children.
I don't know. This is
the 21st century.
This is a thing I could talk about forever, is should we edit children's books of yesteryear to make them more palatable for a 2017 diverse readership? I think yes. What do you think?
I think also yes.
Cool.
Peace out. See you next time. Bye.